Welcome to Spiritual Warfare. My name is Teresa. Today I will be reading Imagine Heaven by John Burke. Near-death experiences, God's promises, and the exhilarating future that awaits you. If you only knew what awaits you. I sat up with a start. What time was it? I looked at the bedside table, but they had taken the clock away. In fact, where was any of my stuff? The train schedules, my watch. I looked around. I was in a tiny little room I had never seen before. It was 1943 in Camp Barkley, Texas, and George Ritchie had enlisted to fight the Nazis. In the middle of boot camp, he got the word that the Army would send him to medical school. His dream come true. The weather and the training both took their toll, and Ritchie got double pneumonia the week he was supposed to ship out to Richmond for school. The morning he had planned to catch the train, he woke up at midnight in a sweat, heart pounding like a jackhammer, with a 106-degree fever. During x-rays, he passed out. Where was I? Ritchie pondered. And how had I gotten there? I thought back, trying to remember the x-ray machine. That's right. They had taken me to the x-ray department, and I must have fainted or something. The train? I would miss the train. I jumped out of bed in alarm, looking for my clothes. I turned around, then froze. Someone was lying in that bed. I took a step closer. He was quite a young man with short brown hair, lying very still. But this was impossible. I myself had just gotten out of that bed. For a moment, I wrestled with the mystery of the man in my bed. It was too strange to think about, and anyway, I didn't have time. The ward boy, maybe my clothes, were in the room. I hurried out of the little room and I looked around. A sergeant was coming along the corridor carrying an instrument tray covered with a cloth. Probably he didn't know anything, but I was so glad to find someone awake that I started towards him. "Excuse me, sergeant," I said. "You haven't seen the ward boy for this unit, have you?" He didn't answer. Didn't even glance at me. He just kept coming straight at me, not slowing down. "Look out," I yelled. The sergeant walked right past George without knocking him down or spilling the tray. But how? Ritchie didn't care. His mind was fixed on not missing his train to Richmond. Medical school wouldn't wait, determined to find some way to get to Richmond. Even if he had missed his train, George headed down the hallway and out the door. Almost without knowing it, I found myself outside, racing swiftly along, traveling faster, in fact, than I have ever moved in my life. It was not as cold as it had been earlier in the evening. Felt neither cold or hot, actually. Looking down, I was astonished to see not the ground, but the tops of mesquite bushes beneath me. Already, Camp Barkley seemed to be far behind me as I sped over the dark, frozen desert. My mind kept telling me what I was doing was impossible, and yet it was happening. A town flashed by beneath me, caution lights blinking at the intersection. This was ridiculous. A human being could not fly without an airplane. Anyhow, I was traveling too low for a plane. An extremely broad river was below me now. There was a long high bridge, and on the far bank, the largest city I have come to yet. I wished I could go down there and find someone who could give me some directions. I caught a flickering blue glow. It came from a neon sign over the door of a red-roofed one-story building with a Pabst Blue Ribbon beer sign propped up in front of the window. Cafe. The jittering letters over the door read, and from the window light streamed onto the pavement. Down the sidewalk toward the all-night cafe, a man came briskly walking. At least I thought I could find out from him what town this was and what direction I was heading. Even as the idea occurred to me, as though thought and motion had become the same thing. I found myself down on the sidewalk. "Can you tell me, please," I said, "what city this is?" He kept right on walking. "Please, sir," I said, speaking louder, "I'm a stranger here, and I'd appreciate it if..." We reached the cafe, and he turned, reaching for the door handle. Was the fellow deaf? I put out my left hand to tap his shoulder. There was nothing there. Disturbed, his hand had passed right through the man. George leaned up against the telephone wire to think. Therefore, for the first time, it dawned on him that he might possibly be dead. The sergeant who had not run into him, the man's body in his bed, he decided to try to get back to his body. As soon as his mind was made up, he was leaving the city by the river and speeding even faster than before back the way he came. He got back to the base and he began a frantic search for his body. Room to room throughout the Army hospital, he had been unconscious when they put him in the room. The loneliness he felt in this unfamiliar city was now a mounting panic as he was unable to get anyone's help in his frantic search for himself. Something was strange about time, too. In this world where rules about space and speed and solid mass all seemed suspended, he had lost all sense of whether the experience was taking a split second or lasting for hours. Finally, he came upon a man in a bed with the ring on his left hand, a small gold owl on an oval of black onyx. It was his ring, and the sheet was pulled way up over his head. It was his ring, and the sheet was pulled way up over his head. George had felt so alive, so himself. He had not really let it sink in that he was dead. Now it hit him. In despair, he sunk down on the bed. The light in the room started to grow brighter and brighter. I stared in astonishment as the brightness increased, coming from nowhere. Seeming to shine everywhere at once, it was impossibly bright. It was like a million welders' lamps all blazing at once. And right in the middle of my amazement came a thought. Probably born of some biology lecture back at the university. I'm glad I don't have physical eyes at the moment, I thought. This light would destroy the retina in a tenth of a second. No, I corrected myself. Not that light. He would be too bright to look at. For now I saw that it was not light, but a man who had entered the room, or rather, a man made out of light. The instant I perceived him, a command formed itself in my mind. Stand up. The words came from inside of me, yet they had an authority my mere thoughts had never had. I got to my feet, and as I did came this stupendous certainty. You are in the presence of the Son of God. He thought about Jesus, the Son of God, whom he had learned about in Sunday school, gentle, meek, kind of a weakling. But this person was power itself fused together with an unconditional love that overwhelmed him. An astonishing love, a love beyond my wildest imagining. This love knew every unlovable thing about me, the quarrels with my stepmother, my explosive temper, the sex thoughts I could never control, every mean, selfish thought and action since the day I was born, and accepted and loved me just the same. When I say he knew everything about me, this was simply an observable fact. For into that room, along with his radiant presence, Simultaneously, though in telling about it, I have to describe them one by one. Had also entered every single episode of my entire life. Everything that had ever happened to me was simply there, in full view, contemporary and current, all seemingly taking place at that moment. How was this possible? I did not know. Transfixed, I stared at myself standing at the blackboard in a third grade spelling class, receiving my Eagle badge in front of my scout troop, wheeling Papa Dabney onto the veranda at Mossside. There were other scenes, hundreds, thousands, all illuminating by the searing light in an existence where time seemed to have ceased. It would have taken weeks of ordinary time. Every detail of 20 years of living was there to be looked at. Yikes. That part I dread. I really do. What have you done with your life? Show me. The question, like everything else proceeded from him, had to do with love. How much have you loved with your life? Have you loved others as I'm loving you? Totally, unconditionally? Why? I had not known love like this was possible. Someone should have told me, I thought indignantly. A fine time to discover what life was all about. I did tell you, but how? Still wanting to justify myself, how could he have told me and I have not heard? I told you by the life I lived. I told you by the death I died. And if you keep your eyes on me, you will see more.